This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Freethinkers, welcome to a radio show as secular as our Constitution. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. No hell below us, above us only sky. This is the August 18th, 2012 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. This show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. Free Thought Radio podcasts and broadcasts in other cities. And this week, we want to welcome listeners in Columbia, Missouri, who tune into KOPN 89.5 Community Radio.
The president of KOPN tells us there are a lot of non-believers and science-minded people in that part of the Show Me State, that's where the university is, who want to hear radio for the rest of us.
And you listeners in the Columbia area might like to know that I will be there. I'm going to be at Westminster College in Fulton, I think Fulton is like right next to Columbia, on September the 18th, that's a Tuesday. It's for the Churchill Institute Symposium at Westminster College. You can find details, if you want to go to that event, on our events page at ffrf.org.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we work to keep religion out of government and work to promote the use of reason in forming your opinion about religion. And in other words, our members are atheists, agnostics, skeptics, freethinkers of whatever pedigree.
We have two interesting guests today. We're going to talk with Alvin Harris, the Nashville attorney who has handled two successful lawsuits for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. He will tell us about the recent positive settlement over the Christian cross on the water tower in Whiteville, Tennessee.
And on the second half of today's show, we'll talk with another member of the Clergy Project, Josh Everett, a former fundamentalist evangelical minister and missionary who is today an atheist.
But first, a victory to report. Atheist Irish eyes are smiling.
Yes, it's taken Patrick Elliott, one of our staff attorneys, 2 years to finally negotiate something with the Irish Fest, which takes place this weekend in Milwaukee. And they have been offering a discount to someone bringing a food donation, which is nice, that's going to the Hunger Project. But the way that this was finagled was you had to attend the 9:30 a.m. Mass.
Catholic Mass.
Those who gave the donation at before the Mass at 9:30 could then get in free for the 11 o'clock Irish Fest. So in other words, this was basically a donation only available, a special discount only available to Catholics who are not they're only a quarter of the state population. And so this was also counterproductive to the work of the Hunger Project. So after 2 years and after many of our members contacted Irish Fest saying they'd like to come and they'd like to donate, but this is a violation of the Civil Rights Act, this has been abolished. Now, anybody who comes by 11 o'clock on Sunday, tomorrow, will be allowed free entry if they bring a can or food item to donate.
So now you don't have to pass go to hell to get into Irish Fest. Some more exciting news to report. Watch for the Freedom From Religion Foundation on public television.
FFRF with TriView Productions has produced a segment that will begin airing nationally starting this weekend on public television affiliates, and it's called Spotlight on Free Thought and the First Amendment. It is guaranteed to run at least 500 times, a minimum of 3 million viewers. It may not come to your public television station, or it may. It's random, it's filler, it's good stuff, and
There's two versions of it. There's a 4-minute version, and then we also have a 5.5-minute version. Are they each guaranteed 500 times? Is that right?
No, it's total.
Total of 500 times. At
least gives them choices.
It's produced by Larry Cohen of TriView Productions. Let's listen right now to the 5.5-minute version of Spotlight on Free Thought and the First Amendment.
Free thought, the use of reason rather than faith, tradition, or authority, to form opinions on religion. More wars have been waged, more people killed in the name of religion than by any other institutional force in human history. So, with such wildly contrasting beliefs in this country, why aren't we at each other's throats? Here's why. It's our Constitution, and its very core of freedom from religion. Our country was founded in part by refugees seeking freedom, seeking to escape centuries of religious persecutions, holy inquisitions, witch hunts.
The United States of America was the first nation where our founders did not claim a pipeline to a divinity. It was a revolutionary act that they created a secular and entirely godless constitution whose only references to religion are exclusionary, that there should be no religious test for public office. The founders were aware of the inquisitions and the pogroms and the religious wars and the terrors in Europe and the persecution in many of the individual colonies, and they wanted no part of that in our new government. So they erected what Thomas Jefferson called a wall of separation between church and state, and that protects all of us. It has prevented the bloodshed and warfare that we see in so many parts of the world where religion is involved in government.
The church worked hard at it, night and day, for 9 centuries, and imprisoned, tortured, hanged, and burned whole hordes and armies of witches, and washed the world clean with their foul blood. Then it was discovered there was no such thing as witches, and never had been. One doesn't know whether to laugh or cry.
Once government gets behind religion, then whose religion? Somebody is going to get persecuted. Somebody is turned into the insider, and someone becomes the outsider based on their personal religious convictions or lack of religious convictions. And our founders wanted no part of religion in government because they knew it was divisive.
There are some believers who don't see the difference between neutrality and hostility. They think efforts of groups like ours to keep the government neutral are actually a hostile act against their faith, when we are not asking for the government to be pro-atheistic either. If the government stays neutral, the government stays secular, then everybody's an insider, nobody's an outsider.
Freedom from religion is what we all value so highly. Privately, I can believe or disbelieve whatever I want.
There's always been this notion in our culture that religiosity is somehow equated with morality. Of course, that's false. I think people just aren't aware of the fact that actually atheists and agnostics and secular humanists are underrepresented in our nation's prisons. They're less than 0.5%. And in the states in the United States that have the highest percentage of non-religious people actually have the lowest violent crime rates, the lowest murder rates, the lowest poverty rates, and the countries around the world, especially the democracies that have the highest degrees of secular people, are also doing the best.
When you think about social and moral progress, it's usually made by rebellious people, people who break the mold, people who are rejecting the dogma. Most progress is made by people who are free thinkers to some degree. They are challenging the status quo. The abolition of slavery was led by people who were either religious liberals or religious heretics. In fact, during the 1800s, the word infidel was a synonym for abolitionist. So you can name all sorts of progress made through history by people who tend to be either very liberal or free-thinking individuals. Otherwise, how is progress going to be made?
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It's brilliant. There's a reason it's the First Amendment.
So that you might recognize, excuse me, Dan's and my voices in that, and also that was Professor Phil Zuckerman, author of Society Without God, and that powerful quote about witches, of course, Mark Twain. And you can look for some very special cameos. You can watch this at FFRF's website. You can watch the 4-minute version, 5.5-minute version. And we have a bonus up at the homepage that's got more footage of Dan being interviewed about morality without religion and purpose in life without religion. And that'll come right up at FFRF.org.
After the break, we're going to talk with Alvin Harris, the Nashville attorney who has handled a recent successful lawsuit in Tennessee.
And with Josh Everett, another evangelical minister like Dan, who has seen the light and is now an outspoken atheist.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and you've heard us talk about the cross on the water tower in Whiteville, Tennessee. Last December, FFRF sued the city over this violation of the Constitution. Earlier this month, that case has reached a successful outcome.
Here's a news story from WBBJ7 in Western Tennessee.
The fight over the constitutionality of crosses on city property like the water tower in Whiteville is finally over. The Freedom From Religion Foundation has settled its lawsuit against the city. In the agreement, city officials agree to never replace the arm on the cross on the top of the tower. Removing it costs more than $4,000, according to court papers. And the city must also pay $20,000 towards the civil rights group's legal fees. Mayor James Villar has also been ordered to not place crosses on the public portion of the sidewalk in front of his insurance business.
Okay, we have attorney Alvin Harris, whom we enjoyed working with, who represented the foundation in this lawsuit, and we have him on the phone in Nashville. And this is the second time Alvin has gained us a legal victory in Tennessee. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Thanks, Annie Laurie. Glad to be here.
So are you happy about this outcome?
Yes, I was, Dan. I hope you and Annie Laurie felt good about it.
It's a victory.
That's the way I look at it. Of course, we would have, I guess in the perfect world, had the entire cross removed from the water tower, but weighing all the factors and consulting with you guys, I think we all agreed that the settlement that we eventually reached was a good one for us.
Well, let's go back and tell listeners what happened. We got you involved after, I think we'd written 4 letters of complaint. Rebecca Market, our senior staff attorney, written 4 letters of complaint with no answer in about a year and a half. And then we asked you to write a demand letter. And why don't you take it from there, Alvin?
Sure. I wrote the letter on behalf of the FFRF in September of 2011. And we, of course, worked on it together. And my letter gave them 30 days to remove the cross on the water tower, or else we were going to file a lawsuit. This caused a big stir in Whiteville, and there was some news coverage of that. And I think initially they had decided that they were going to remove it, the entire cross, but then the brain trust in Whiteville came up with the idea of just removing one of the arms, which is what they did.
So this is a sarcastic reference here. I take it to brain trust.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of scratched our heads about that, you know, not really knowing what to make of it. And I think we were maybe about ready to just move on when in early December, the town put up 2 big white crosses right in front of City Hall, and then the mayor put up a big white cross on the sidewalk in front of his insurance agency, which was pretty much the last straw. So we filed the lawsuit in December just in time for Christmas. And, you know, that was the start of the case.
It looks really funky when you look at that news clip that we just aired. There's this big water tower, and there's this weird-looking, well, she referred to it as a cross with an arm missing. It, you know, it looks like a gallows now.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing, and it's, you know, hard to know exactly what will happen to that. I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately they don't just remove the whole thing just because it looks so weird. But at least for now, it's still up there. And we are ready to litigate, the case, based on that and the other crosses, which, by the way, as soon as the lawsuit was filed, they immediately removed the crosses in front of town hall and from the sidewalk. And so the only, cross that was, or partial cross, I guess, that was remaining was the one on the water tower.
Well, legally, we're now referring to it as a one-armed structure.
Oh, right. A one-armed
well,
structure.
Unless you think that Jesus gave his right arm for your sins.
Yeah. I don't think that was where they were going with that.
Well, Mayor Ballar has been put up kind of a bizarre press release, and I know it got coverage in the local paper. I don't know if you know about that, Alvin. Where he was, well, I'm just wondering if this is all over with yet, because he almost made it sound like he had agreed to not put up any standalone crosses, but it was unclear to me that he really understands what that settlement involves. What do you think?
Well, it's hard to know what they understand. I do think that they had a law firm in Jackson, Tennessee that understood the legal issues. And hopefully they are getting good advice from that firm and won't decide to try and press their luck again. But there's really, I mean, who's to know what's going through their heads down there? I mean, we're talking about a very, very small town. I believe the population is less than 5,000 people. And obviously the vast majority are, Christian.
And they spent $24,000 at least on our side of things, plus they had to pay their own attorney. So that must come into their thoughts somewhat, the amount of money they're spending.
Well, you would think so. How big could the tax base be down there?
Hmm. Well, if they do something else, they're going to generate some more work for you, Alvin, because the money went to pay for your fees, which we really appreciate.
Right. Well, I always enjoy working with you guys, and got a great opportunity to spend time with Annie Laurie on our trip to the courthouse in Jackson for a mediation conference.
That's right, and that was
Annie Laurie got the.
Yeah, that was my first. That's a new thing in the Sixth Circuit, isn't that right? Where they make the parties come together and try to mediate.
That is a relatively recent requirement, maybe in the middle district the Western District of Tennessee, perhaps that may have been more longstanding than I am aware of. But at any rate, I guess the benefit was Annie Laurie did get to see the countryside between Nashville and Whiteville.
And it was actually very pretty. And you were a very good chauffeur.
And you got to shake hands.
Well, we got back and forth without incident.
And you got to shake hands with the mayor who called us atheist sons of bitches.
Yeah, that was that was an interesting little meeting. We walked into the judge's office, and the first thing out of the mayor's mouth was, "Hi, I'm the bad guy."
Yeah, very interesting admission. So, well, it's taken a long time to get anywhere with this case, and we much appreciate your help and. We hope this is resolved, and we know there are other crosses on water towers, and what we need are people who live in that community to come forward if they're willing to sue. Unfortunately, this is not the only such aberration, even if it's the only one-armed structure.
Mm-hmm. Alvin,
right,
you...
And
oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, before we conclude, I certainly want to thank the FFRF member who... objected and really was the basis for you know, your organization having standing to file the lawsuit.
Yes, and
very brave.
He was very brave. And well, thank you very much for joining us today. And
this is strike two. Alvin won a case for us in 2004 in Tennessee. So maybe we'll call you again, Alvin, if something else comes up. We were talking with Alvin Harris, a Nashville attorney. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. We're going to hear the story of a fundamentalist evangelical minister, Josh Everett, who has happily abandoned his faith and is now an atheist.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and that little intro piano is, of course, Dan.
It doesn't have a title.
Much of the music, the piano music you hear on this show.
We should call that something. We should name it.
Think of something irreverent.
The Secular Blues or something.
But speaking of music, this week is the 150th birthday or the anniversary of the birth of free-thinking composer Claude Debussy, who was born August 22nd, 1862. So listen for some of his music. At the end of the next two segments, we'll be playing Clair de Lune, and this is unusual, Rhapsody for saxophone.
A lot of people don't realize how much of the music that has been beloved by the human race was written by people who were free from religion. Like me, Josh Everett was a fundamentalist evangelical minister and a missionary. In fact, we both preached in Mexico for a time, not at the same time, but we both learned a little bit about that culture. And like me, Josh has also seen the light. He's now an atheist. He joined the Clergy Project last year, and he's been openly speaking about his non-belief.
He wrote an article that appeared in the La Crosse Tribune last June called "The Truth Has Set Me Free." And that article is reprinted in the June-July issue of Free Thought Today, which is the newspaper published 10 times a year by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We still have a few copies of that available, but we also have that online if you look under publications at our website. And we have the current issue also available August. And I want to welcome Josh Everett to Free Thought Radio.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited to be on this podcast or on the radio program because the podcast is actually my favorite podcast to listen to.
Do you listen to it religiously?
Basically, yes.
In the article,
or non-religiously, I should say.
Non-religiously. In the article, there's a really cute picture of you and your wife, Raissa, who's from Brazil. But you were not a missionary in Brazil. You were a missionary in Central America, is that right?
That's right, in Mexico, Guatemala, and El Salvador.
Ah, estabas predicando el Evangelio de Cristo.
Exactly.
Ah, exactly. He was preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Well, we don't know a whole lot about you, actually. You're part of the Clergy Project, like Dan. And what was your beginnings, and how did you become a missionary?
Well, I come from a long line of Southern Baptist preachers in Texas and Louisiana. My dad, granddad, two uncles, and many other ancestors are or were Southern Baptist preachers. An ancestor of mine was in the 1800s, wrote a book on Christianity, and even a regional association of churches in North Louisiana used to be called the Everett Association after my family. In fact, up until a year or two ago, one of my uncles was president of the Baptist General Convention of Texas. He was the guy that sort of excommunicated a Dallas area church for ordaining homosexual deacons. Mm. So I was sort of indoctrinated from conception, as it were.
It's in your blood, huh?
You imbibed.
Basically.
Imbibed Southern Baptist ministry.
Right. I was homeschooled for many years using the ACE curriculum, which is mentioned in Richard Dawkins' Root of All Evil video.
Yeah, that's really terrible.
And even private Christian schools also. So it's as much indoctrination as you can expect in evangelical circles. And when I was 14, I surrendered to the ministry, as we say, and began to volunteer in various ministry positions. I took my first paid position as a youth minister at the age of 18 and was officially ordained. I also did volunteer summer mission work in Mexico, Guatemala, and El Salvador over a period of about 6 years. And I think it's important as non-believers to recognize that we can reach believers. I was as entrenched in fundamentalist evangelical Christianity as anyone can be, and I broke free with the help of education, a couple of my cousins, and lots of books and debates, including the books and debates of Dan.
Oh, that's right. You came to one of my debates in La Crosse. That's where I met you and Heisa the first time. So I want to ask you, I ask this a lot of people who used to believe or used to say they believe. Did you really believe? In your mind, were you talking to Jesus and God and feeling the Holy Spirit, or were you going through the motions?
No, I sincerely believed. Like I say, I was as entrenched as anyone. I read my Bible and prayed many times every day. I was a very, very sincere and devout believer and very fundamentalist. You know, it took a very long process before I was even open to considering the possibility that my beliefs were not necessarily correct. And that was a pretty long process that involved liberalization of my theology up to the point where I finally rejected it all. But, I mean, I was fundamentalist evangelical, so I believed in the six-day creation and all of that.
So I'm still trying to get a handle on the chronology here, because I'm looking at your picture. To me, you look pretty young. How old are you?
I am pretty young. I'm 27, and so most of my ministry, I began at such a young age. You know, like I said, I surrendered to the ministry at 14. So I began ministering at that point. I was accepted as a religious authority despite my age because my family was so well known in that region as pastors. And so I began working as a sort of a volunteer evangelist in the area, filling in for pastors and everything. And at 18, I began to actually be paid to preach. And even as I liberalized, I changed denominations from the Southern Baptist Church. After a little while, I was just rejected primarily the sexism. That was the thing that initially started my rejection of religion.
Well, first, were you ordained as a Southern Baptist minister?
I was ordained at the age of 18 as a Southern Baptist minister.
Were you ordained through a church congregation?
I was.
Yeah, that was like Dan. The parallels between you and Dan are amazing because he began preaching at what, 15?
Well, you were earlier. I started preaching at the age of 15. And you're right. Even at that age, there's this amazing, unwarranted respect that's given to a young person who's speaking the truth. My first sermon was on the dusty banks of a canal down south of the border in Mexico where I preached the gospel, and I was hooked after that point.
Oh, yeah, me too. The mission trips that I went on were very instrumental. They were instrumental, first of all, in my desire to learn Spanish and also in my progress as a preacher, considering I did quite a bit of street preaching and evangelization and everything in Latin America.
So, Josh, did you just go straight into preaching? You didn't go on to higher education?
I went on to higher education. One fortunate aspect of my story is that I was planning on being a full-time missionary. And so I went to school to become, I studied pre-veterinary medicine and Spanish in order to become a veterinarian missionary in Latin America.
Where did you go
to? In order to do the veterinary medicine, I had to go to, of course, a public secular university. And so I was fortunate that I got I ended up just getting my degree in Spanish and then going on for my master's. And my move to grad school was what gave me the opportunity to exit ministry.
So you got corrupted by secular education.
What public universities did you attend or graduate
I went
from?
To Louisiana Tech University for my bachelor's and Louisiana State University for my master's.
Now, coming from this background that you had, this strong Southern Baptist background and being pushed right into the ministry, you just said that sexism is what opened your eyes. So why, I mean, usually I would say someone in your position would not be that sensitive to sexism. What was it that offended you so much? Why did you have that sensitivity?
Well, I would say I've always had sort of an overactive sense of justice to a great extent. And so I just eventually could not tolerate the racism, sexism, ethnocentrism, and homophobia that seems so central to Christianity. And so that sort of led me on the path to liberalizing theologically and eventually rejecting all of it. It took me a while. Morality played a central role in it. I believe that Christian morality was about the best morality and improving ourselves. And I eventually discovered that Christian morality isn't about what is right or wrong, good or bad, moral or immoral. Christian morality is about what is Christian. And so the Christian life isn't about living the most moral life possible. It's about living the most Christian life possible. And, you know, I really rejected that idea because Christian morality wasn't about improving ourselves, society, our lives, or the lives of others. It's about controlling the lives of others and keeping everyone subservient to Christian authority.
Well, that's the point. You wouldn't need Christianity if we could all just be humanistic, moral people. I used to preach that without, you know, our whole purpose in life wasn't to glorify ourselves and make ourselves feel good and have ourselves have a happy life. It was to glorify God, to give Him the glory, to worship Him as the Lord and Savior, and to, as you even said, you surrendered to the ministry.
Exactly. You know, I think unlike many doubting clergy and church members who fight to keep their faith, my sense of intellectual integrity would not allow me to reject reality through fanciful exercises in cognitive dissonance.
Now, Josh, were you unusual in pursuing, in going and getting a degree in college? Was your family college educated, or did they tend to be seminary only? Did that set you apart?
Well, to some extent, yes and no. My parents were very instrumental, actually, in my going to get a degree that was not entirely from a seminary. My parents believed that it was important to have a career to fall back on if church work could not allow you to support your family financially. And in these rural parts of the South, many times, you know, churches don't pay you enough to support your family, or at least not enough to have it as a complete vocation. And so my parents did encourage me to go on to school, although they attended religious universities. Both of my parents graduated from Dallas Baptist University, and so me going to a public university was a little bit odd from that standpoint, but it was also close to home, and so I don't think they really were bothered by that at all. However, of course, the warnings about the dangers of education and secular education in general were always there, too.
We're going to take a break here, Josh, and after we come back, I want to ask you what might be your strongest argument for atheism. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're talking with Josh Everett, a former fundamentalist minister who has become an atheist, lives in La Crosse, Wisconsin, as part of the Clergy Project, and we'll finish our fascinating conversation with him in a minute.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie, and we are talking with Josh Everett, a member of the Clergy Project, a former fundamentalist minister who lives in La Crosse, Wisconsin, who's now seen the light, is an atheist. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Josh.
Thank you.
We only have about 6 or 7 minutes here, and you were going to tell us one of the strongest arguments for atheism that you can think of?
Well, I think like most other members of the Clergy Project, I rejected Christianity and other religions based on immorality, injustices, and the blatant contradictions with reality that are so inherent in religious belief systems. One of those, I would say, the problem of evil is one that is important, as well as just the claims about God. If God is supposed to be all-loving, omnipotent, omniscient, and be completely just, shouldn't we be amazed by the love that we see in scriptures and the justice that we see, rather than appalled by the lack of love and the lack of justice and just the downright cruelty that we see in scriptures?
So as a minister, you would know. As a minister,
exactly. I studied everything about God that I could find. Of course, it's all about comprehending who God is. And if scripture and doctrine cannot promote at least an internally consistent view of God, then we know something is wrong with that. If the Bible is not an accurate and reliable source, then why should we believe anything that it says?
Now, Josh, you came from Texas, got a master's. How many missionary trips had you been engaged in?
I went every summer for 6 years.
And so when did you realize this was hooey? When did you come out of the closet? What did you tell your parents? What's their reaction? How has it been since then?
Well, family considerations are a big deal for both myself and my wife. As you know, my family is extremely religious, and my wife is also. And so, fortunately, like I said, I was single, and so that helped a little bit with my wife, because she was an atheist after I became an atheist and after we met. And, I didn't feel the need to control my wife's opinions or beliefs. I've always felt that spouses must give each other complete freedom to live their lives. So I only discussed my beliefs when she wanted to discuss them, and I only ever discussed one issue each time. And that's something I pretty much do with my family also. And I think when your opinions coincide with reality, you don't have to put much effort into convincing anyone who is open-minded and intelligent. And fortunately, my wife is very intelligent, and like I say, now she's also an atheist.
So were you your wife's parents' worst nightmare then?
Basically, yes. I think they had a little more trust for me. The religion issue didn't really come up with them so much, just because I had a religious pedigree, so to speak. And so I was fortunate in that respect. I was able to be a little more trusted by them without having to comment on religious issues whatsoever. I kept my open beliefs and honesty about that with my wife. And with family, I've just more talked about it as they've brought it up in order to discuss issues that they might be more likely to listen to me about, rather than just being very in your face about it. I originally had wanted to be very direct with them, but a cousin of mine, who's also an atheist, was very wise in saying that that what I needed to consider was how important my relationship with my family was and how that would affect how direct I was with them. So I decided that I can ease into it and be direct as necessary given the context and the issues that arise, and so I can maintain my integrity without unnecessarily provoking conflict with them, and thereby maintain some semblance of a relationship.
So you have the relationship is ongoing. You haven't burned any bridges.
No, I haven't burned any bridges. But for my father, to be an Everett is to be a Christian, a Republican, and a Southern Baptist.
Uh-oh.
So my father was upset enough when I became a liberal and left the Southern Baptist Church due to sexism. And he said recently that he would rather have never been born than to think that any of his children would spend an eternity in hell.
Oh. Yeah.
So you can imagine with statements like that, it can be a little bit rocky.
Yeah.
And I know it will be a lot more volatile when my wife and I decide to have children. You know, the issue of training grandchildren is going to be a big one.
On the other hand, they're not going to, they're going to want to be part of your children's lives, so that might tamp
exactly.
down the proselytizing.
But
so what are
I
you
think
doing?
We'll be able to be a lot more direct in that situation, and we will have to be, because I'm not going to allow my children to be indoctrinated by their grandparents.
Let me tell you that the same thing happened in my family. My parents were shocked, but eventually my mom and dad both became atheists as well. And I just saw Dad on his 87th birthday this last weekend, and we just love talking philosophy, and it was really nice. So who knows? I won't pray for you, but who knows what might happen in your family. So you're teaching Spanish.
Well, we can keep our fingers crossed anyway.
You're teaching Spanish now.
I am. I'm a Spanish teacher and sort of the technology guru for the language department at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse.
So you have successfully transitioned.
I have. My move to graduate school allowed me to leave vocational ministry. I still taught Sunday school and everything during for a very liberal denomination during the first year of my master's, and I began liberalizing quite a bit, and I eventually rejected everything after the first year of my master's. So during the second year of my master's, I became much more strongly atheist and was able to make the transition out of church ministry. That's still a difficult thing for my family to accept the support.
Well, thank you so much, Josh. And people can read your article in the June-July issue of Free Thought Today now online at ffrf.org/publications.
We also want
thank
to
you
thank,
very much for having me.
Thanks, Josh. We also want to thank Dave McCann, who is the producer and the engineer of this show, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Listen to archives, sign up for the podcast. Go to ffrf.org/radio.
We'd really invite you, if you're a regular listener and supporter of what FFRF does and stands for, to join at ffrf.org. You can also call 1-800-335-4021. If you want to talk to someone, you have to do that during workday hours in the week. And tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you